Okay, let's unpack this. Close your eyes for a moment and picture a small, unassuming herb. You probably have it in your spice rack right now. Maybe it's flavoring your roast potatoes or, I don't know, a warm cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Thymus vulgaris or just thyme. For centuries, it's been a quiet companion in our kitchens and, you know, traditional medicine cabinets. But what if I told you that recent cutting-edge science is uncovering a side of thyme that's, well, astonishing?
Yeah.
A side suggesting it could hold keys to literally slowing down how we age, shielding our brains from debilitating diseases, potentially fighting cancer, and even rebalancing our metabolism.
It's true. The stack of research we've delved into is painting a picture far grander than a simple culinary herb. It's suggesting that this familiar plant, for all its humility, is a powerhouse for modern therapeutic possibilities.
Right.
Tackling some of our most complex health challenges at a really fundamental biological level.
That's our mission today, for you, the learner. To explore these groundbreaking discoveries that are radically repositioning thyme, we've sifted through the latest studies to bring you the most important nuggets of knowledge, everything from how thyme works at the tiny molecular level, all the way up to its impact in, well, human studies. But first, there's a fascinating, almost illogical context we need to set.
Yeah, what's truly intriguing here is that despite this explosion of scientific evidence, you won't find thyme being officially prescribed by doctors as a pharmaceutical drug, not in the way you would, say, an antibiotic or a blood pressure medication.
It's strange, isn't it?
It is, and it raises an important question, doesn't it? Why isn't such potentially beneficial natural compound recognized as medicine in the same way as, you know, patented drugs?
Okay, so why is that? Is it not effective? Or not safe?
Well, that's a critical distinction, and the answer, surprisingly, has more to do with legal definitions than with scientific validity, really. In the U.S., the prevailing regulatory framework, primarily the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, or DSHE, passed back in 1994, it categorizes most herbal products, like thyme, as dietary supplements.
Dietary supplements.
And here's the crucial point. These supplements are regulated more like a type of food rather than pharmaceutical drugs.
Ah, okay. So treating like food, not like medicine. What does that mean in practice?
Exactly. It means they don't go through the same incredibly rigorous, multi-year, multi-billion dollar pre-market approval process by the FDA that pharmaceutical drugs must endure, you know, to prove both safety and effectiveness.
Right. Drugs have to prove they work and are safe before they hit the market.
Precisely. For a drug, the manufacturer has to show, unequivocally, that it works as claimed and is safe. For supplements, the burden of proof is different. It's actually on the FDA to prove a supplement is unsafe before it can be removed from the market, rather than on the manufacturer to prove it's safe and effective before it's sold.
That's a huge difference.
It is. And a direct consequence of this framework is that manufacturers of dietary supplements are legally prohibited from claiming their products can prevent, diagnose, treat, or cure diseases.
Ah, okay. That's why you see those labels.
Exactly. If they make such a claim, their product is immediately reclassified as a drug, which then subjects it to that much stricter, much more expensive pharmaceutical regulation pathway. This is why you'll always see those disclaimers on supplement labels, you know, stating that the FDA has not evaluated the claim and that the product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
So if I'm understanding correctly, then, this regulatory landscape, this sort of legal and economic reality, rather than a lack of compelling scientific research or maybe inherent safety concerns, is why these potentially powerful natural compounds face what we might call an illogical or an indirect path to official recognition as medicine.
You've hit the nail on the head.
It sets the stage for understanding the incredible potential we're about to dive into and why you won't find doctors adding thyme to their prescription pads just yet.
Exactly. This context is crucial for our deep dive because it helps explain why we're discussing this fascinating research outside of traditional clinical prescription scenario and why it's so important for you, the listener, to understand the science behind it.
That clarifies things beautifully. Thank you. So now that we understand the landscape, let's turn our attention to the cutting-edge science. We're going to illuminate its incredible role in healthy aging, how it offers significant neuroprotection for our brains, its surprising anti-cancer activity, and how it could profoundly improve metabolic health. Let's start by truly unpacking the plant itself and what gives it this remarkable power. So, for centuries, thyme has been valued not just for its taste, but for its more traditional medicinal uses. Our ancestors intuitively knew it had something special, right?
Definitely.
People have turned to it for respiratory issues, like helping to clear stubborn coughs or soothe bronchitis. It's also been a go-to for gastrointestinal complaints, like calming an upset stomach. And beyond the body, it's even been a staple in food preservation, which is kind of a testament to its natural antimicrobial powers.
Yeah, that's right.
But as we mentioned, there's a whole new world of understanding emerging about what makes this plant so potent.
Indeed. The secret to thyme's remarkable effects lies deep within its very complex chemistry. We're talking primarily about its essential oil, which scientists often refer to as TEO, and a rich profile of other active compounds that make up its unique fingerprint.
TEO, thyme essential oil. Got it.
Think of this essential oil as the concentrated essence of the plant's active power, packed with tiny, specialized molecules.
And what are the stars of the show within that oil?
Within that essence, the true superstars are two particular compounds, thymol and carvacrol. These are what scientists call phenolic monoterpenes, but don't let the name scare you.
Okay, I'll try not to.
Think of them as a specific class of highly active plant-derived chemicals rich in antioxidant power that are particularly good at interacting with our cells and, you know, kickstarting beneficial processes. They're recognized as the primary active compounds driving many of thyme's beneficial actions.
So thymol and carvacrol,
yeah,
the main players.
Primarily, yes, but it's not just a two-person show. Thyme also contains other significant players, like rosmarinic acid, which you might also find in rosemary, funnily enough.
Yeah, makes sense.
And caffeic acid. Plus, it's rich in a group of beneficial compounds called flavonoids, such as luteolin and apigenin. These are powerful plant pigments often associated with broad health benefits.
So it's a whole cocktail of compounds.
That's right. And it's really important to understand that it's this blend of compounds, often working together in what scientists call synergy, that often makes the whole plant so much more powerful and versatile than any single isolated compound might be.
Synergy, meaning they work better together.
Exactly. It's not just one ingredient doing all the work. It's the entire botanical recipe where each component enhances or supports the others, creating a cumulative effect that's greater than the sum of its parts.
And that understanding of how these different compounds interact is precisely what's allowing scientists to bridge the gap from ancient folk remedies to modern frontier medicine.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. So when we talk about thyme influencing something like the Wintecatin pathway in cancer, or activating the NRF2 antioxidant response pathway for brain protection, or putting a damper on the NLRP3 inflammasome in cases of brain inflammation,
yeah.
Can you give our listener a super quick mental image of what's happening at that microscopic level?
Yeah.
Why is targeting these pathways so precise and important?
Absolutely. Imagine a complex set of dominoes inside your cells. Each domino is a molecule, right?
Okay.
And when one falls, it triggers the next, creating a chain reaction that controls basically everything from how a cell grows to how it defends itself.
Right, like a biological chain reaction.
Yeah, exactly. In diseases like cancer or chronic inflammation, these dominoes might be falling in the wrong order or maybe too quickly, causing chaos. Thyme, in these cases, is like a highly skilled player. Its compounds don't just randomly knock over dominoes. They selectively stop or redirect or even give a little nudge to specific dominoes in that chain.
Ah, okay. Precision targeting.
Precisely. Restoring balance and steering the cell back towards health. That's the beauty of targeting these precise signaling pathways. It's much more sophisticated than just a blunt instrument.
That's a perfect image. It truly highlights the sophistication of these natural compounds. Now, as we peel back these layers of thyme's complexity, we stumble upon something truly profound. Most often, we look for ways to treat the diseases that come with aging, heart disease, cognitive decline, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
But what if instead we could influence aging itself? This feels like science fiction becoming reality. What's the groundbreaking evidence suggesting thyme might actually be a geroprotector, an agent that targets the fundamental processes of aging?
It's incredibly exciting, honestly. The cornerstone evidence comes from a fascinating in vivo study, meaning it was done in living organisms, in this case, mice specifically, chronologically aged mice.
So just naturally older mice.
Exactly. These were older mice naturally progressing in their lives who were fed a diet supplemented with thyme essential oil, TEO, every single day. The primary finding was quite remarkable. The mice receiving TEO had a significantly higher survival rate compared to those on a regular diet.
Wow. So they just lived longer.
Simply put, they lived longer, healthier lives. But what was even more striking was what they found at a cellular level.
Okay.
These TEO-fed mice showed significantly longer blood telomere lengths.
Telomeres.
Yeah.
Right, those are the caps on the ends of our chromosomes, yes, like on shoelaces.
That's a perfect analogy. Think of them as the protective caps at the very ends of your chromosomes, those structures in every cell that carry your DNA. They naturally shorten a little bit with each cell division, and their length is a key biomarker, a kind of biological clock for how old your cells are.
So longer telomeres mean biologically younger cells, essentially.
That's the idea. Preserving them is really like preserving cellular youthfulness. And importantly, the dosage used in this study was also well below any known toxic levels for mice, showing it was safe at that level.
And this telomere protection seems to tie directly into a concept that's gaining a lot of traction in the aging research community, something called inflammaging. Can you break down what that means and why it's so central to aging?
Absolutely. Inflammaging is the chronic, low-grade, systemic inflammation that slowly but persistently smolders in our bodies as we get older. It's not the acute, obvious inflammation you get from, say, an injury.
Right, not like a swollen ankle.
No, it's more like a silent underlying fire that contributes to almost every age-related problem you can think of, from heart disease to brain decline and even cancer. It's a huge driver of biological aging.
So this constant low-level fire is damaging us over time.
That's right. And the anti-aging effects of TEO appear to be largely mediated through putting a damper on this inflammaging. For instance, the study showed TEO had a direct impact on the hippocampus.
The memory center of the brain.
Exactly, which is absolutely crucial for memory and learning, and it's notoriously vulnerable to age-related decline. When they analyzed gene expression in these mice, TEO supplementation led to a lower expression of a pivotal aging-related gene called P16INK4A and other related genes like CDK4 and CDK6.
Okay, P16, CDK. Those sound important but complicated. What do they actually do?
To simplify, these genes are central regulators of how our cells age. When they get activated, they basically tell cells to stop dividing and enter a state called senescence.
Senescence.
Think of these senescent cells as old, retired cells that have stopped doing their job and are no longer dividing. By suppressing this genetic program, time appears to significantly delay cellular aging in a critical part of the brain, keeping those cells younger for longer.
So it's stopping cells from retiring too early, in a way.
Kind of, yes. And these senescent cells, these retired cells, aren't just sitting there quietly. They're actually quite grumpy, as we sometimes say in the field.
Grumpy cells. I like that.
They actively contribute to systemic aging by triggering something called the senescence-associated secretory phenotype, or SASP. This is basically a toxic cocktail of pro-inflammatory molecules that these aging cells release into their surroundings, directly driving that chronic inflammation, that inflammaging throughout the body.
Oh. So the retired cells are actually stirring up trouble.
They really are. But TEO directly counteracted this. The mice given TEO had significantly lower levels of a key pro-inflammatory messenger called IL-6, interleukin-6 in their hippocampus, remember that memory center,
right,
and lower levels of IL-1B, interleukin-1, in both their liver and cerebellum, which is important for movement and balance.
So lower inflammation across different organs.
Exactly. It shows a targeted anti-inflammatory effect across multiple vital organ systems, directly combating the chronic inflammation that underpins so many age-related diseases. This was even validated in lab dish studies with isolated cells, showing a clear dose-dependent reduction in inflammatory markers.
And the researchers are really pointing to those powerful antioxidants we mentioned earlier, especially thymol and its precursor P-thymine, as the primary compounds behind these remarkable anti-inflammatory and telomere protecting activities. So it's quite specific.
Very much so. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the research suggests a really elegant multi-step cascading mechanism. Time acts as a true geroprotector, an agent that targets the root causes of aging itself.
Okay, so walk us through that cascade.
It starts with the initial defense, oxidative stress. This is a primary driver of cellular damage and telomere shortening. The potent antioxidants in time, like thymol and carvacrol, act as a first line of defense, mopping up these harmful free radicals and reducing the overall stress on our cells.
Step one, less stress.
Right. This leads directly to telomere protection. By reducing that oxidative damage, thyme essential oil directly protects those chromosome caps, the telomeres, from shortening too quickly. This isn't just theoretical, it's confirmed by the objectively longer telomeres measured in the blood of the TEO-fed mice.
Okay, so tangible evidence of preserving those caps.
Precisely, indicating a preservation of cellular youthfulness at a very fundamental genetic level. Then, with slower telomere shortening, cells take much longer to reach that retired or senescent state.
Delayed retirement for the cells.
Exactly. This is clearly reflected at the molecular level by the observed downregulation of those senescence-inducing genes like P16INK4A. So time isn't just cleaning up cellular damage, it's actively suppressing the very genetic program that pushes cells towards aging.
Wow.
And this has a profound systemic anti-inflammatory effect. By reducing the accumulation of those grumpy senescent cells, TEO diminishes the source of that pro-inflammatory SACS cocktail.
Fewer grumpy cells, less inflammatory noise.
You got it. This results in a measurable decrease in key inflammaging signals like IL-6 and Viral-1BB in vital organs like the brain and liver. This integrated cascade from antioxidant activity to telomere protection, delaying cellular aging and reduced chronic inflammation, culminates in improved organ function, a lower risk of age-related diseases, and ultimately a higher survival rate, as observed in the animal study.
So it's not just one magic bullet.
Not at all. It's a symphony of protective actions that truly redefines what aging well could potentially mean.
Beyond its remarkable anti-aging effects, time is showing incredible versatility in protecting our most complex and vital organ, the brain. This is huge. Where do we even start with its neuroprotective powers?
That's a great question because the research is incredibly diverse. When we look at conditions like Alzheimer's disease and general cognitive decline, time and its components appear to combat the underlying issues through several distinct mechanisms. And we even have some early human clinical evidence, which is always exciting.
Human evidence. Okay, tell me about that.
Yeah, one notable study involved university students who took thymus vulgaris leaves orally. The results were quite encouraging. They showed significant improvements in both prospective memory,
which is remembering to do things in the future.
Exactly, like I need to pick up groceries later.
Mm-hmm.
And also retrospective memory, which is recalling past events, like what did I have for dinner last night?
Okay, so improvements in both future and past memory recall.
Correct. And the same study also found a significant reduction in their anxiety and depression scores, hinting at broader benefits for mental well-being too.
Interesting. So how does it work at the molecular level? What are the mechanisms for protecting the brain?
Well, moving to the molecular level, one key mechanism involves regulating the cholinergic system. A primary strategy in current Alzheimer's treatments is to increase the availability of a brain chemical called acetylcholine.
Right, that's crucial for memory and learning.
Absolutely. In a study using a zebrafish model of amnesia, thymus essential oil, TEO, actually improved memory by reducing the activity of acetylcholinesterase, or ACE.
ACE. Acetylcholinesterase. What does that do?
To put it simply, 8-C is like an enzyme that acts as a cleanup crew for acetylcholine, breaking it down in the brain. So by inhibiting it, time essentially allows more acetylcholine to be available for longer, which can boost brain signaling.
Ah, so it keeps more of the memory chemical around.
Pretty much. This is a common and effective strategy used by many conventional AD medications, showing time is working on similar validated pathways.
Okay, mechanism one, boosting acetylcholine. What else?
Another crucial aspect of Alzheimer's is the accumulation of sticky clumps of protein called amyloid beta, or A plaques. These cause significant damage to brain cells and disrupt their communication.
The infamous plaques.
Indeed. Lab studies using human neuroblastoma cells, these are neuron-like cells grown in a dish, show that TEO directly protected these neurons from A-induced damage. It significantly reduced markers of programmed cell death, or apoptosis.
Apoptosis, cell suicide, essentially.
Right. It helps brain cells survive and avoid self-destruction when faced with that toxic amyloid. What's particularly clever is how it does this. TEO was found to activate something called the NRF2 pathway.
NRF2. Sounds familiar.
It should. Think of NRF2 as a master switch for your body's natural antioxidant defenses. When activated, it tells your cells to make their own powerful antioxidant enzymes, like heme oxygenase 1, HO1, and superoxide dismutase, SOD.
So time isn't just being an antioxidant, it's telling my cells to make more antioxidants.
Precisely. It's like flipping a switch that ramps up your cells' internal defense systems against damage from things like amyloid plaques. It's a much more proactive approach.
That's really smart. So protection from damage.
Yeah.
Does it help with repair too?
It seems so. Time's components may also play a role in literally repairing and building new connections in the brain. Studies in mice have shown that thymol can upregulate brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF.
BDNF. I've heard of that. It's like brain fertilizer.
That's a perfect way to put it. BDNF is absolutely crucial for neurons to survive, grow, and form new connections, which we call synapses. It promotes brain plasticity.
Okay, so promoting growth and connections.
Yes, and other lab work also showed that thymol promoted the growth of new connections, called neurite outgrowth, like the branches and wires neurons use to communicate. It even helped repair damage to the internal structure of brain cells, specifically microtubules, which are like the structural beams of a cell.
Wow, suggesting physical reconstruction.
It suggests the potential for the physical reconstruction of neuronal circuitry, which is truly remarkable for a plant compound literally helping to rebuild damaged brain connections.
So the benefits aren't limited to just Alzheimer's then. It seems like these neuroprotective effects could extend to other conditions like Parkinson's or even stroke recovery.
It truly appears so. In an animal model of Parkinson's, which involves the loss of dopamine-producing neurons.
Crucial for movement and mood.
Exactly. Carvacrol, another key compound in thyme, was shown to protect these dopamine neurons from cell death. This protective effect was linked to a reduction in brain inflammation, specifically a marker called astrogliosis, which indicates an overactive immune response in the brain.
Okay, protection in Parkinson's models. What about stroke?
And in a rat model of ischemic brain injury, or stroke, where the brain is deprived of blood flow, administering a thyme extract significantly improved the animal's motor coordination and balance during their recovery. At a biochemical level, the extract significantly reduced brain levels of melandialdehyde, or MDA.
MDA, a marker of damage.
Yes, a key marker of the severe oxidative damage that occurs during events like stroke. So it's really acting as a powerful protector against a range of brain injuries and neurological challenges.
That human study mentioning reduced anxiety and depression really caught my eye earlier. How does a plant like thyme, working at a molecular level, connect to something as complex as mood? Is it purely through reducing that brain inflammation, or are there other mechanisms at play?
That's a great question. Emerging evidence strongly links neuroinflammation to conditions like depression and anxiety. So thyme's powerful anti-inflammatory properties are indeed incredibly relevant here. Its constituents directly target key inflammatory pathways within the central nervous system itself.
Like what?
For example, both thymol and carvacrol have been shown to dial down the NFE signaling pathway. Remember our domino analogy. NFB is like a master switch domino for inflammation. By inhibiting it, thyme prevents it from activating genes that lead to inflammatory responses.
Cutting inflammation off at the source.
Exactly. Additionally, thymol can reduce components of the NLRP3 inflammasome in microglia, which are the brain's resident immune cells, the brain's cleanup crew.
The inflammasome. That sounds intense.
It is. This protein complex is like a fire alarm that, when triggered by cellular damage or infection, releases powerful inflammatory signals that can drive brain inflammation. By inhibiting it, thyme helps to calm that brain-wide inflammatory response. It also helps by not just suppressing the bad pro-inflammatory signals, but by boosting the good anti-inflammatory ones like TGF-beta and IL-10.
Okay, so it tackles inflammation. Anything else for mood?
Yes. Beyond inflammation, thymol also seems to directly influence our brain's chemistry. In a mouse model of depression, thymol treatment was found to reverse the stress-induced depletion of crucial neurotransmitters.
Sure.
Norepinephrine, NE, important for focus and energy, and serotonin, 5-HT, which plays a major role in mood and well-being, both in the hippocampus.
Norepinephrine and serotonin. Many antidepressants target those.
Precisely. Many conventional antidepressant drugs work by increasing the availability of these very same neurotransmitters, suggesting that thymol has a similar antidepressant-like effect, at least in these models. So how can one herb do all of this for the brain? Reducing inflammation, protecting cells, maybe even boosting mood chemicals. The answer likely lies in a profound, interconnected system, the gut-brain-immune axis. It's a concept that's truly reshaping our understanding of health, pointing to the gut as a central player.
This is a critical point that really unifies many of thyme's benefits. Neuroinflammation, which we know is a common issue in conditions like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and even depression, is often made worse by systemic inflammation that actually starts in our gut.
Starts in the gut. How?
When our intestinal barrier, often called the gut lining, is compromised, what some people refer to as a leaky gut, it allows bacterial components like lipopolysaccharide or LPS.
Inflammatory toxins from gut bacteria.
Exactly. It allows them to literally sneak into the bloodstream. This triggers a body-wide inflammatory response that then fuels inflammation directly in the brain.
Wow. So problems in the gut can directly inflame the brain. It's a major connection. And this is precisely where thyme intervenes directly and very effectively. Studies show that thyme extract actually enhances gut barrier function. It does this by boosting the expression of tight junction proteins, like ZO1.
Tight junctions.
Yeah.
They seal the gut lining.
They literally act like a strong sealant, closing the tiny gaps between intestinal cells. This means reduced gut permeability, less leakiness, and significantly lower levels of those inflammatory bacterial toxins making their way into the blood.
So thyme helps seal the gut.
Yes. Simultaneously, Thyme's compounds like thymol and carvacrol directly inhibit those inflammatory hubs we just discussed, NF-key and the NLRP3 inflammasome, not just in the brain, but throughout the entire body in immune cells.
So it's working inside and outside the gut.
Exactly. This integrated action sealing the gut to reduce the source of inflammatory triggers, dampening the peripheral immune response to lower the body's overall inflammatory state, and then directly inhibiting inflammatory pathways within the brain itself, is likely far more effective than a single target drug could ever be.
A holistic approach.
It really positions thyme as a holistic modulator of this crucial axis, explaining its broad benefits for brain and mood. It's a foundational player, working at the very source of systemic inflammation, which is a powerful insight.
Now let's turn to one of the most challenging areas of medicine, cancer. Thyme's potential here is evolving from general observations to a sophisticated understanding of its ability to target specific cancer pathways. This is incredibly complex, but the research is truly compelling.
Indeed. Thyme essential oil, TEO, and its main compounds, thymol and carvacrol, have shown broad-spectrum cytotoxicity, meaning they can actually kill cancer cells in anti-proliferative effects, meaning they stop these cells from multiplying and spreading.
Broad spectrum. So against many types of cancer cells.
These effects have been observed against a wide array of cancer cell lines in lab studies. We're talking about everything from colorectal cancer cells to breast cancer, including aggressive triple-negative forms, oral squamous cell carcinoma, bladder cancer, liver cancer, even blood cancers like leukemia and multiple myeloma.
Wow, that's a long list.
Yeah,
it is. It also shows effects against ovarian cancer cells, even those that have become resistant to chemotherapy and gastric cancer cells.
How does it generally work? How does it kill these different cancer cells?
The general proposed mechanism involves the specific nature of compounds like thymol. These molecules are lipophilic.
Fat-loving.
Exactly. So they're thought to easily move through and accumulate in the fatty membranes that surround cancer cells. This disrupts the cancer cell's structure, essentially making its outer membrane leaky.
Like poking holes in it.
Pretty much. This leakage then allows essential enzymes and other important molecules to escape, ultimately causing the cancer cell to break down and die.
But it's more than just general damage, right?
Yeah.
Research is pinpointing how thyme directly interferes with the very control centers that drive cancer. This is where the real precision comes in, tackling cancer at its root.
Absolutely. Let's look at the Wontocatinin pathway in colorectal cancer. This is highly significant because this particular signaling pathway is abnormally active in about 90% of all colorectal cancers.
90%. So it's a major driver.
A huge driver, making it a prime therapeutic target. A 2020 study showed that thymol directly inhibits this Wontocatinin pathway.
How does it inhibit it?
The way it does this is by preventing the accumulation of a key protein called picanin. When finin builds up in a cell, it acts like an on switch, turning on genes that drive uncontrolled cell proliferation.
Okay.
So by suppressing this accumulation, thymol essentially turns off key cancer-driving genes like c-myc and cyclin D1, which are major players in cell division and growth.
Turning off the growth signals.
Right. This resulted in a measurable decrease in colorectal cancer cell growth, movement, and invasion in lab dishes. And remarkably, it also significantly decreased tumor volume and lung metastasis in an animal model of colorectal cancer.
That's a powerful effect, from lab dish to animal model.
Very significant. Moving to head and neck cancer, a detailed analysis showed that thyme essential oil regulated three critical signaling pathways: interferon signaling, N-glycan biosynthesis, and ERK5 signaling.
Okay, what does regulating those mean?
For example, it downregulated crucial cell cycle genes like UBEDC and CDC20, which are involved in how cancer cells divide and multiply, so slowing down replication. It also ramped up a gene called OAS2.
OAS2.
It's part of the interferon signaling pathway that helps the body control cell growth and death, and can even prime immune responses against cancer.
Interesting. What about the other two pathways? N-glycan, and ERK5.
By targeting N-glycan biosynthesis, Thyme may arrest cancer cell growth by interfering with crucial receptors that cancer cells rely on for communication and nutrient uptake. And modulating ERK5 could have anti-angiogenic effects.
Anti-angiogenic, stopping blood vessel growth to the tumor.
Exactly, like cutting off their supply lines, potentially starving them. Both carvacrol and thymol also inhibit the PI3, KKA, TMTOR, and MAPT pathways.
They sound like important hubs.
They are. To simplify, these are central cascades that act like master switches for cell growth, proliferation, survival, and metabolism. In men cancers, these switches are stuck in the on position, leading to uncontrolled growth. So hitting these pathways is a broad but powerful approach against many different types of cancer.
And does Thyme trigger cancer cell death in different ways?
Yes, it appears capable of inducing not just one, but multiple forms of programmed cell death in cancer cells. This includes traditional apoptosis, the cell self-destruct sequence,
right,
but also autophagy, which is like cellular self-eating, where the cell consumes its own damaged components, and even ferroptosis, a unique iron-dependent form of cell death.
Multiple ways to die. Why is that important?
This multi-pronged attack could be a very clever strategy to overcome cancer cells' notorious resistance to a single death mechanism, especially in stubborn cancers like leukemia and multiple myeloma.
Okay, this is incredibly powerful research. However, here's a critical detail that highlights the complexity and the need for caution and further research, especially for you, the listener. There's a crucial paradoxical finding at play here. What scientists call the hormetic effect. What's that about?
This is really important, and it underlines why we always say more is not always better, especially with potent compounds. In the study on head and neck cancer cells, the UMS CC1 line, while high concentrations of thyme essential oil were clearly cytotoxic and killed cancer cells.
As expected.
Right. They found something unexpected. Subtoxic concentrations, meaning very low levels, were actually found to stimulate cancer cell proliferation and viability.
Wait, low doses helped the cancer cells in that specific case?
In this specific cancer cell line, yes, that's what the data showed. This is what we call a biphasic dose response, or a hormetic effect. It means that for this particular situation, too little thyme could actually be detrimental, potentially promoting the cancer rather than fighting it.
That's counterintuitive and, frankly, a bit scary.
It can be, and it isn't unique to thyme. This phenomenon has been observed with some conventional chemotherapy drugs, too. It reveals a crucial complexity, that nature's power isn't about simple, more is better, but precise balance.
Right.
It's a potent reminder that understanding how natural compounds work and under what conditions or at what specific doses is just as critical as knowing that they work. This kind of nuanced detail is why self-medication based on general knowledge can be risky, especially when dealing with serious conditions like cancer.
Absolutely. Professional guidance is key.
Always essential. It pushes us towards a future of highly personalized and scientifically guided natural interventions, not just guesswork.
Exactly. But armed with this sophisticated understanding of how thyme works at the molecular level, scientists can actually hypothesize which other cancers might be susceptible to its anti-cancer effects based on the pathways it hits. What are some of those potential targets?
Based on the molecular pathways we know thyme targets, we can indeed extrapolate, though these are hypotheses needing direct confirmation. For example, since thymol inhibits the 1-tachymenin pathway, a fundamental driver of cell growth,
which is active in 90% of colorectal cancer.
Right. We can hypothesize potential effects in other cancers where this pathway is known to be abnormally active. These include liver, gastric, small bowel cancers, aggressive subtypes of breast cancer, ovarian, prostate, and even certain brain tumors like glioma.
Okay, that's a wide range. What about the other pathways?
Given that thymol and carvacrol inhibit the PI3K, AKTM-TOR, and MAPK signaling pathways, which are central to proliferation and survival in so many cancers.
The master switches.
Exactly. We can look at cancers where these pathways are frequently dysregulated. This includes hormone receptor positive breast cancer, renal cell carcinoma or kidney cancer, neuroendocrine tumors, melanoma, pancreatic, lung, and thyroid cancers.
And the immune connection, interferon signaling.
Because TEO was found to modulate interferon signaling, which is critical for the immune system to recognize and attack tumors, it suggests potential for cancers that are treated with immunotherapy, like melanoma and non-small cell lung cancer. It might even make cold tumors, those that don't provoke a strong immune response, like pancreatic or ovarian cancer, more responsive to treatment.
Making immunotherapy work better, potentially.
That's the hypothesis. Finally, with its effects on N-glycan biosynthesis and ERK5 signaling, researchers can hypothesize potential impacts on cancers like pancreatic cancer, B-cell malignancies, lung, breast, liver cancer, and malignant mesothelioma, where these pathways play a significant role in progression and metastasis.
So a lot of potential avenues for future research.
Absolutely. It's important to remember for you, the listener, that these are extrapolations based on mechanism, not direct studies yet on all these specific cancers with time, but they open up incredibly exciting avenues for future research and maybe even drug development.
Time's surprising benefits don't stop at aging and complex diseases like cancer. It's also emerging as a potential agent for metabolic health, tackling widespread issues like obesity, diabetes, and cholesterol. This feels like it's touching almost every major modern health challenge.
It truly is remarkable in its breadth. Its effects are genuinely multi-systemic, involving our fat tissue, liver, gut, and cardiovascular system. For example, in preclinical models of diet-induced obesity.
Mice fed a high-fat diet.
Exactly. Time leaf extract, or TLE, significantly decreased body weight gain, lowered body fat percentage, and reduced the weight of white adipose tissue, essentially their body fat, all without affecting how much food the animals ate.
So it wasn't just making them eat less.
Correct. This suggests it's influencing metabolism directly, not just appetite. Similar positive results were seen in studies on obese rats as well.
Okay, so potential against obesity. What about cholesterol and heart health markers?
Time also shows consistent beneficial effects on lipid profiles, which is crucial for heart health. Lipids are just fats in your blood. In studies on pigs, incorporating time into their diet actually lowered total cholesterol levels in both their blood and muscle tissue.
Interesting. And in models relevant to diabetes.
Yes. In diabetic rats, time oil significantly decreased levels of total cholesterol, triglycerides, LDL, often called your bad cholesterol, and VLDL, while crucially increasing levels of HDL, the good cholesterol, which helps clear cholesterol from your arteries.
Lowering the bad, raising the good. That's ideal. How does it do that?
This is likely linked to time's powerful antioxidant properties. By preventing harmful oxidized LDL, which is a major contributor to arterial plaque, and potentially inhibiting key enzymes involved in cholesterol synthesis in the liver, it offers a multifaceted approach to improving lipid health.
Makes sense. What about blood sugar and diabetes itself?
Beyond lipids, time also has significant effects on glucose control. In multiple studies using diabetic rat models, time extracts significantly improved blood glucose control, with effects actually comparable to some conventional anti-diabetic drugs.
Comparable to drugs. That's impressive.
It also improved insulin sensitivity and reduced insulin resistance in obese rats. This means the body cells were better able to respond to insulin and absorb glucose from the blood. The mechanisms here are complex, involving things like boosting glucose clearance from the bloodstream, reducing sugar absorption from the gut, and stimulating glucose utilization in tissues like muscle.
And given the link between metabolic issues and liver health, does time help the liver?
Yes. Metabolic syndrome is often linked to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, NAFLD. Time has shown protective effects on the liver itself. In diabetic rats, time extract reduced elevated levels of liver enzymes like AST, ALT, and ALP, which are common markers of liver damage.
So less liver stress.
Exactly. It also protected the liver from adverse changes associated with obesity, effectively shielding it from fat accumulation and inflammation. Mechanistically, this liver protection was linked to time's ability to reduce genes that promote cell death while increasing genes that promote cell survival in liver tissue, so supporting liver cell health directly.
Beyond these broad effects, are researchers finding even more sophisticated ways time is working its metabolic magic, maybe at a more precise molecular level?
Indeed. One fascinating discovery is that rosmarinic acid, another key compound in time we mentioned earlier.
Right, also found in rosemary.
That one. It has been shown to inhibit angiotensin-converting enzyme, or ACE. Now, ACE inhibitors are a major class of prescription drugs used worldwide to treat high blood pressure.
Like lisinopril or remipril.
Exactly like those. So this provides a clear molecular basis for time's traditional use for blood pressure issues and its observed blood pressure lowering effects in animal models. It's like finding a natural version of a well-known pharmaceutical mechanism.
Very cool. Any other novel mechanisms?
Yes, and this one ties back to something we discussed earlier, the gut. A pivotal finding from high-fat diet mouse models is that time leaf extract, TLE, significantly improves gut barrier function.
Sealing the gut again.
Exactly. It achieves this by increasing the expression of those tight junction proteins, like ZO1, which literally seal the gaps between intestinal cells, preventing unwanted substances from slipping through.
Less leakiness.
Right. This leads to reduced gut permeability, less local inflammation in the colon, a normalized pH balance in the gut, and crucially, a significant reduction in circulating levels of inflammatory bacterial endotoxins, like LPS, in the blood. TLE also beneficially altered the fecal metabolite profile, increasing beneficial compounds that were depleted by the high-fat diet.
This suggests the gut isn't just one of many targets for Thyme. It might be the central command center for many of its metabolic benefits. Why is the gut so central to our metabolic health? It seems counterintuitive sometimes.
That's an important question, and it really shifts our understanding. A high-fat diet, common in Western societies, is known to disrupt the delicate balance of gut bacteria and, crucially, increase that intestinal permeability to leakiness. This allows inflammatory molecules, like bacterial endotoxins, to enter the bloodstream. This condition, often called metabolic endotoxemia, is now understood to be a key driver of insulin resistance, fat accumulation in the liver, NAFLD, and the systemic inflammation that characterizes metabolic syndrome. Think of it as a low-grade, constant drip of inflammatory signals originating from your gut and affecting your whole body.
So the gut is leaking inflammatory stuff into the body, driving metabolic problems.
In essence, yes. And Thyme appears to intervene directly at this very source. By strengthening the physical gut barrier, it's like shoring up a crumbling wall. This reduces local inflammation within the gut itself and critically lowers the amount of endotoxins entering the circulation.
Stopping the problem at the source.
Exactly. This significantly alleviates that chronic metabolic burden on the rest of the body. This upstream action then leads to those downstream benefits we discussed. Improved insulin sensitivity, healthier lipid profiles, reduced liver stress, and less body fat accumulation. Thyme, in this sense, isn't just an anti-diabetic agent. It's perhaps more accurately described as a powerful gut barrier restorative agent whose broad metabolic benefits are a major consequence of this primary foundational action.
That's a profound insight. It really challenges us to think about how interconnected our body systems truly are, especially the gut's role. Finally, let's turn to Thyme's role in our immune system. It's not just a general anti-inflammatory, as we've touched on, but it seems to demonstrate incredibly precise control over our body's defenses, almost like a conductor tuning an orchestra, maybe.
That's a great analogy. Thyme truly has a sophisticated dual action when it comes to the immune system. On one hand, it's a powerful suppressor of pro-inflammatory cytokines.
The messengers that shout inflammation.
Exactly. These are small protein messengers that immune cells use to communicate and amplify inflammation. Thyme essential oil and its main components, thymol and carvacrol, potently inhibit the release of key inflammatory messengers like tumor necrosis, factor alpha, TNF-alpha, interleukin-6, IL-6, interleukin-8, IL-8, and interleukin-1, IL-1. This represents a very comprehensive shutdown of those inflammatory signals.
Put out the fire.
Effectively, yes, but it doesn't just put out the fire, it helps rebuild and calm the system. Simultaneously, Thyme actually promotes the production of calming anti-inflammatory cytokines, like transforming growth factor beta, TGF-beta, and interleukin-10, IL-10.
The calm down signals.
Exactly. These are crucial for resolving inflammation once it starts, preventing excessive tissue damage, and promoting the healing and repair process after an immune response. So it's not just suppressing, it's actively rebalancing. It's immunomodulating.
So this dual action suppressing the bad guys and boosting the good guys is achieved by targeting some of the master switches of the immune response, similar to what we saw in cancer.
Exactly right. For example, both thymol and carvacrol directly dial down the activation of the NF-key pathway, which, as we discussed, is truly a master switch for inflammation across many contexts. By preventing it from entering the cell nucleus and activating inflammatory genes, it essentially prevents the inflammatory cascade from even beginning.
Turning off the main power switch.
You could think of it that way. Thyme components also modulate the activity of the cyclooxygenase 2, or KEOX2, enzyme.
KEOX2? Isn't that what drugs like ibuprofen target?
Precisely. KEOX2 produces inflammatory prostaglandins. This is significant because this is the same molecular target as many common non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs, like ibuprofen and Celebrex. So Thyme is acting on a well-known pathway for pain and inflammation relief.
Interesting. A natural KEOX2 modulator.
Potentially, yes. And as we've also touched on in the context of the brain, Thymol inhibits the NLRP3 inflammasome, that critical sensor of cellular damage that drives very potent, often runaway inflammatory responses in various tissues.
So hitting multiple key inflammatory control points.
Very much so. It's a multi-targeted approach.
These powerful actions aren't just theoretical in a lab dish. They're being tested in real-world clinical settings, particularly for respiratory conditions, right?
Mm-hmm.
What have we seen in human studies there?
Yes, the clinical evidence is quite promising, especially for common ailments. In a randomized clinical trial involving children experiencing asthma exacerbations, a group receiving thyme syrup alongside their standard care showed a statistically significant reduction in activity-induced cough compared to the placebo group.
Less coughing with activity. That's important for kids.
Very important. And even more significantly, perhaps, the thyme group showed a significant improvement in forced expiratory volume in 1 second, or FEV1.
FEV1, that measures lung function, how much air they can blow out quickly.
Exactly. It's a key measure of lung function that indicates how well a person can exhale air. While it didn't significantly impact wheezing or shortness of breath in this particular study, the positive effects on cough and FEV1 are clinically meaningful outcomes for asthma management.
Okay, so helpful in asthma. What about things like bronchitis?
And in other studies on bronchitis and productive cough, where mucus builds up, thyme syrup proved quite effective. An observational study reported an improvement in cough intensity in over 93% of children with bronchial catarrh or bronchitis treated with thyme syrup.
Over 93%.
Wow, yes. And in a separate randomized double-blind study in adults with productive cough, thyme syrup was found to be as effective as the conventional mucolytic drug bromhexine.
Bromhexine. That's a standard prescription drug to break up mucus.
That's right. Often prescribed to break up mucus and ease coughing. So here we have a natural product performing on par with a pharmaceutical in a rigorous study.
That's quite something. Finally, it's not just what compounds are in thyme, but also when they're harvested and how they interact that truly matters. This adds another layer of complexity and fascination, doesn't it? It's like the timing of the harvest profoundly changes the plant's potency.
This is a crucial detail for anyone looking at natural compounds, and it's a fascinating area of research. One study specifically compared thyme essential oil from thyme harvested at the beginning of its flowering period versus the end.
All right, early bloom versus late bloom.
Exactly. When tested on immune cells, only the TEO from the beginning of the flowering period was a potent inhibitor of pro-inflammatory cytokines like IL-6, IL-8, IL-1, and TNF.
Only the early harvest works for inflammation.
For inhibiting those specific cytokines, yes. The TEO from the later harvest, surprisingly, was ineffective, even though chemical analysis showed it still contained the widely recognized active compound, thymol, in similar amounts.
So it had thymol, but didn't work the same way. How is that possible?
It highlights a crucial point that goes beyond simply identifying a single active ingredient. The anti-inflammatory efficacy of thyme, in this case, isn't solely due to one compound like thymol. It's the complex interplay, the precise balance, the synergy between dozens of compounds that are present at specific stages of the plant's life cycle.
The whole orchestra matters, not just the first violin.
Beautifully put. And this chemical profile can change dramatically depending on the plant's developmental stage, the soil conditions, the climate, all these environmental factors. This nuance is vital for potential future applications because it means that for a natural compound to be truly effective and consistent, we need to understand the holistic picture of its chemical composition and how it interacts as a whole.
A big challenge for standardization, I imagine.
It's a challenge, yes, but also a tremendous opportunity for how we source and potentially standardize these powerful natural medicines for consistent benefit. It requires a more sophisticated approach than isolating single chemicals. Hashtag tag, hashtag outro.
So what does this all mean? We started with a common kitchen herb, thyme, something most of us barely think about. And through this deep dive into the latest research, we've uncovered a world of, frankly, surprising therapeutic potential.
Mm-hmm.
From potentially slowing down the fundamental processes of aging and protecting our brains from debilitating diseases to battling cancer cells in lab studies and rebalancing our metabolism, all while fine-tuning our immune responses. It's quite a list.
It really is. We've seen how specific compounds like thymol and carvacrol act on precise molecular pathways, demonstrating how a natural product can exert sophisticated control over biological processes. And often, as we discussed, it's through multiple interconnected mechanisms, like the profound impact on the gut-brain immune axis, that these broad benefits manifest across the body.
It's complex, but elegant.
It's a powerful reminder that nature holds incredibly complex solutions to our health challenges. This body of evidence truly positions Thymus vulgaris not merely as a traditional herb, but as a really valuable source of next-generation therapeutic leads for modern medicine, pushing the boundaries of what we thought possible from something so common.
However, we have to remember that unique regulatory landscape for natural compounds that we discussed right at the top. The fact that a common herb like thyme shows such profound and diverse potential in scientific studies, yet isn't considered medicine in the same way as a patented drug. Well, that raises an important question for you, the learner.
Mm-hmm.
In a world where such a common herb shows such profound and diverse potential, what does that mean for our traditional definitions of medicine and how we approach health and healing in the future? It certainly challenges our assumptions about what constitutes effective intervention, doesn't it?
It truly does. It forces us to look beyond conventional categories.
Yeah.
And it encourages us, hopefully, to keep an open, curious mind about the potential that's all around us.
Absolutely. Keep those curious minds engaged, explore the research for yourselves, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.